Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Welcome back to the Gentle Art of Crushing It. My name is Randy Smith, and I'll be your host today. And I'm really excited to have Mike O'Connor with us today. Mike is the founder of Nexus Point, and Nexus Point helps small business owners outsource their back office. He's been a very heavy investor and operator in various businesses, and he had 100 units at one point as well in real estate. So, Mike, welcome to the show. Excited to have you here.
Thanks, Randy. Appreciate you having me here on a Friday afternoon. Glad to be here.
Outstanding. Well, let's jump in, man. Tell the audience, if you can, a little bit more about yourself and how you found yourself where you are today.
I love it. So, Mike O'Connor, I reside in Inlet Beach, Florida. No one knows where that is. So if you've heard of 30A, it's in the panhandle of Florida on the Gulf Coast. Great spot to be. Married for over 10 years with two kids, just moved from Atlanta about a year and a half ago. So we were in the chaos of Atlanta and we're here now. My story is, I guess, a serial entrepreneur at heart. I always have been. I was a kid who was selling lemonade and, you know, fifth grade on the streets and burned CDs in seventh grade from my locker. A University of Georgia grad, started off in corporate America doing like the big consulting gig that everyone thinks is awesome and they want to do. And very quickly realized like, this just is not for me, right? Like I am not built for corporate America. I don't do well with structure. I don't do well with hierarchy. I don't do well with, you know, direction. So I was like, I got to do something different. And, you know, fortunately at that time, this was when I had this realization, it was about 2013. The real estate market was just in the pits, right? And I was smart enough to realize that there was an opportunity there. So I started buying real estate, small, mid-sized multis. Our largest ended up being a 100 unit deal, but we, duplexes, single families, 16, 32 units, we'd flip houses. We would do all sorts of cool things. And that really got me on this entrepreneurial journey, right? So I ended up creating a vertically integrated real estate business where we owned the real estate. We had property management. We did third party as well, but then we plugged in brokerage, landscaping, construction, you name it.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. Since then, that got me into investing in a flooring company, some firearm companies of all things. I've tried franchising concepts, hard money lending, really any way to make a buck. And it's been a fun ride. And my new passion now, I've kind of moved on from that real estate business. And like you said earlier, I'm founder and CEO of Nexus Point, right? A business process outsourcing company focused on helping small and medium-sized business owners outsource their back office operations to global talent, right? Which is how I scaled my old business. So I'm literally taking the model I had before and helping other business owners do the same thing. So it's been a blast and I'm loving it.
Are you interested in real estate investing but don't know where to get started or think you don't have the time or money? Are you stuck in your W-2 because the golden handcuffs make it hard to walk away? If this sounds like you, check out impactequity.net and schedule some time to talk with the founder, Randy Smith. Randy went from massive income to leaving his W-2 through passive income, and he can help you do the same. www.impactequity.net.
Wow. That is a mouthful. So it sounds like you took the fully integrated model in the syndication operator space to a whole new level when you said you did landscaping and flooring and all that. Like you literally brought everything in-house, it sounds like.
So we would never bite off more than we could chew. But what we used to look at, so at the very beginning, it was straight just purchase, right? And then we outsourced everything, right? And then what we realized is like, look how much money we're spending on management. And the management's not that great, right? Look how much money we're spending on construction and like also not that great.
Yeah.
And so we would slowly look at our P&L. The first thing was management, brought that in-house, right? We started controlling that. We'd still kick out all these projects. And even before we brought in the construction and the brokerage and all that, we started doing third-party management because people came to us and said, hey, you actually manage with an owner's mindset, right? You're looking at the P&L, you know how to treat tenants. You're not just some real estate agent who couldn't hack it during the recession. Like you guys actually know how to manage assets. Could you take on ours? So we started doing that. And then, you know, maybe once a quarter, every half a year, we'd look at our P&L. We're spending a ton on landscaping, right? We have all these lawns, all these single family houses we started managing, brought that in-house. construction brought in-house. People come to us, ask us to buy and sell real estate or point us to somewhere. All right, we have our license. Let's start doing that. It was this really cool model where like someone would come to us, we'd transact the real estate, manage it, construct it. Like it was awesome. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. So, and was this all in the Atlanta area or where was the business operations?
It was all in the Atlanta area. We had a 100-unit complex down in Albany, Georgia, which is like South Georgia. It was an interesting trade. We made money on the deal. It didn't cash flow as well as we would have wanted it to, but it was a win at the end of the day. And then we made this decision to go to Indianapolis, which, by the way, has been a really cool market. Indianapolis, if you don't know anything about it, has really seen a lot of growth like in the late 2000 teens. But we realized like, why are we overcomplicating this? We live in Atlanta, which is like one of the most booming real estate markets ever. We can go and see and touch and feel the assets. And we knew people there. We knew we knew everyone. And so we pulled back from that and just focused on Atlanta.
I love it. Yeah. So I actually owned some single families in Atlanta.
What part?
And it was, I don't know if you know zip codes or not, but it was on 30315. So within the perimeter,
Southeast.
Not very nice at all.
Yeah.
You know, these were probably C minus, D plus assets with, and you know, the clientele that was renting those units down there as well.
So. I might even know the street, to be honest with you.
Yeah. You probably would. So Rhine Hill and, anyway, it doesn't matter, but you know the area. It was a very interesting space. And we actually ended up selling all of our units just after COVID when things exploded. So our timing was impeccable. But
congratulations.
Yeah.
I think that's East Atlanta, right? Near 30312, like the Decatur, kind of Clarkston type area.
So it was south and south. East of whatever the main highway was heading south there. Yeah.
Yeah. So exactly. 85. Awesome.
Very cool.
We spent a ton of time there.
I'm sure. So you ended up building this huge property management company, construction management, all the other things. And then at some point you end up shifting and you go into another direction. Why the shift? Multifamily in the mid to late teens, I think, was blowing up there.
Yeah.
Why the shift?
So I mistimed the market just a little bit, right? I've always been a little as aggressive as I can be with like spreading out. I'm conservative when it comes to like timing, right? So late 2010s, you got to remember, we were on a 7 or 8 year run at that point, right? This is like right before COVID. I was starting to feel like it was getting a little frothy, right? We were looking at assets. I knew how they performed. I couldn't quite pencil returns that I was used to. And again, I was spoiled. We were buying 13, 14, 15, 16, where like, you know, you couldn't miss, right? You sit on an asset for 2 years and you double your money, right? So So I pulled back a little bit from that just because I wasn't seeing the numbers I wanted. So that's when we started venturing into other businesses, right? We funded someone to start a flooring business in Atlanta, right? That business now does $8 million a year in just floor and wall coverings, right?
Wow.
I invested in a couple firearm companies, right? That's been a really wild ride as far as like it's so dictated by like the climate and politics, right? COVID had a big impact. The election cycle has a big impact. That's been interesting. And tried some franchising concepts and things like that, but we really tried to diversify where we're putting our funds. And looking back, I wish I just kept running in real estate for a couple more years, I'm not upset with the decision that we did to go into these other businesses.
Yeah. So now you mentioned that you were funding these other businesses. So are you providing financing to them, or are these, is it similar to like a hard money loan, but for businesses, some structure like that, or?
Yeah. So there's kind of three structures. We would do hard money lending often, right? So people that are flipping houses, people that just needed cash for projects. And we constantly had hard money out at any point in time. And this is before interest rates were really high, back when they were down 3-4%, we were lending, you know, 12-15% with 1 or 2 points up front. Great model. With the firearm companies, for example, we did basically like a private equity raise where we raised just a few million dollars, went out, took on some bank debt and acquired a company, then did an asset purchase agreement for a second company and wrapped them together. They both, you know, are out there producing to this day. And then the flooring company, we essentially guaranteed that we provide the seed capital. So for a flooring company, you need a lot of logistics, right? You need things like forklifts, racking, you need a warehouse, right? All of those come with either purchasing or they come with some type of financing and personal guarantees. So I personally guaranteed the warehouse. you provide the financing up front. You're kind of running cash flow negative at the beginning. You got to set up accounts with the big flooring providers. Yep. And being in real estate, we had a lot of contacts in the space that were doing, needing this anyway. So
sure.
Not only it was good leverage because we were able to put the capital in and very quickly bring customers in. So
got it.
You know, within the first 6 months, or it was probably 8 months the first year, we did $1.2 million, which is just awesome because we just had that network already. So it kind of made sense. We were using our strengths and our connections to our advantage.
And so were you partnering with an operator then that was actually doing the work, the day-to-day, the management of all of those as well?
Yeah. So one of my best friends from college, you want to talk about a guy who knows flooring like the back of his hand? He is phenomenal. And he's good at just like looking at situations, assessing them, dealing with the stress that comes with construction projects.
Sure.
And he was working with a couple guys and they just weren't doing him right. There was just a lot of nefarious things going on. And so he basically said, hey, can you help me build a better mousetrap? I said, absolutely. Right. So we started planning it out for a few months. This was probably like October of 19. And it's what's funny, Randy, is October of 19 is when we started talking about it. We launched April or May of 20, like right as the world was shutting down with COVID, right?
Sure.
And
sure.
And so we had this lease that I just, you know, personally guaranteed and this cash that I'm out. And two of the clients that we brought in put in a 60-day stop work order because they didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
What was cool about that is that got us scrappy and we went out and we found builder clients, we found restoration clients, we found people who were still going. And if you know anything about what happened with COVID and building, it just boomed, right? In some of these areas around Atlanta near the lake, Lake Oconee. A bad situation turned good just kind of out of necessity.
Yeah, fantastic. So I'm wondering if we can we back up a little bit? You mentioned obviously entrepreneur, but you were working in the consulting business. So your experience before you got into the entrepreneur space, what did that look like? Were you right out of college, jumped into an entry-level consulting role, or what were you doing exactly before that?
Yep. I graduated college. I went to a company called Capgemini. It's like IT IT consulting. They, you know, implement, you know, IT projects and things like that. And I went to a company called Ernst & Young, which more people probably know of. But I was that young consultant that was flying. I had clients in Alaska, Minneapolis, Philadelphia. Yeah. Like it was cool. It's what you think about. You're wearing suits and you go to these on site. You're 23 years old and like I have no business really being here, being charged up at the rate that I am. But I just very quickly realized I was looking at my VPs like where I wanted to be and what their life looked like.
Yeah,
how much money they were not really making. How many hours they were putting in, how many times I had to step in on the weekend. And I started thinking like, I eventually want a family, right? I was got engaged fairly quickly. So I was, you know, about to get married. And I was like, this isn't the life for me.
Yeah.
And that's why I jumped to Ernst & Young. Same thing. Then I did a small real estate consulting company. I was like, let me try a small company.
Sure.
Again, I was a cog in the wheel. I was like, this is not for me. I've got to go out and set my own destiny and kind of take the bull by the horns. And that's what I did.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for walking through that because that is... This is not the normal path of the entrepreneur. Entrepreneur usually starts and they're out there hustling from day one. But you actually went the other route where you're probably educated well. You're working 70, 80 hours a week, probably in this consulting roles, flying all over the world. No work-life balance whatsoever.
At all.
So you're basically an entrepreneur, but you're not getting paid to be an entrepreneur or you're not getting the benefit of it. So that makes a lot of sense. So you shift into the world of entrepreneurship, which can be somewhat forgiving, I think, as well. And if you're a hustler, like it sounds like you are, then no question why you did as well as you did. So very interesting. Thanks for walking through that.
Yeah. And I enjoyed that experience. And I think it gave me a certain level of polish with how I operate. Because
sure,
you can tell when you're dealing with an entrepreneur, if someone who's never really been in a corporate setting, they're a little less sharp around the edges, right? So it gave me a certain level of sophistication, which was great. And then just an appreciation for what we have. And to your point about being an entrepreneur, I think there is less risk. If you're willing to just go out and put the work in, you will make it happen. Keep your head down, stay focused. Don't let the noise distract you. You will make it happen. If you believe in what you're selling or doing or, you know, buying into and you do right by people, you'll be successful.
I love it. Yeah, very good. Thank you for walking through that. That makes more sense coming into this now.
Now that
you share that. So you started essentially providing capital and essentially support to operators to build kind of their dream, and you had some very success with flooring and ammunition or guns or something like that. What are you working on now? What kind of projects are getting you up in the morning?
Yeah, so now I'm focused on Nexus Point, which we were talking about earlier. I built my entire back office in my last business using outsourced help. And what you got to remember is, right, COVID really accelerated the use of the global talent pool. And you got guys like Tim Ferriss, who have been talking about it since the 4-hour work week, where, you know, you just wave a magic wand and all of a sudden you can sit on the beach all day. Like, that's not exactly true. And then you see the big companies, when you call in with an issue, you get some outsourced help helping you. What you don't realize is, like, there's such a market for, like, very high talented back office operations that you can use in an SMB. And again, COVID accelerated with things like what we're talking about here over, like, a Zoom meeting or training tools like Loom, how sophisticated the Google Drive has gotten with interactive spreadsheets. It's made the world a lot more connected, so it's been easier. But we started doing this in 2013, 14, 15 timeframe, right? And people kept coming to me and they were like, Mike, like, how are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Where are you finding the people? I'd tell them, I'd show them, and they'd hire someone, they'd find someone. They're like, oh, this is amazing, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you think about real estate, right, paperwork heavy, a lot of touch points, there's a lot that has to happen. So in order to scale and perhaps in an oftentimes low margin business, you need people. Yeah. If I were hiring all those roles stateside, I would have struggled. So fast forward, after I, you know, have pushed the real estate thing more to the side in the passive area, I was like, I still want to go. I spent a couple of years where I was golfing more than I wanted to golf, and I was, you know, kicking around. I was getting bored, and so I'm diving headfirst into this. Again, it's a lot of fun. So I'm taking the framework that I use to help my business scale, and I'm working with other entrepreneurs and business owners to do the same thing. And it's a lot of fun, right? Because I get to talk to business owners across various industries every day. Mm-hmm. I'll jump from talking to a social media influencer to a guy who sells private jets to an accounting firm, like all within an hour, three hours, right? Yeah. And it's awesome. It's very fulfilling. I think it's one of the true businesses where it's a win-win-win. Like, we win, the associate wins because we're giving them a good wage and a good job, and then our client wins because they're scaling and growing. It's really awesome.
I love it. And it's kind of going back to those old consultant days where you're working with multiple operators or multiple businesses and bringing value to them and helping improve 100%. Efficiencies. So, yeah, 100%. Very cool. Now, is there a target avatar for you, or a specific type of business that you like to focus on, or that you're leaning towards more?
Yeah, we're still trying to niche down into, like, some industries. We like SMBs, so we consider that, you know, 75 employees or less. Okay. And then I would say most of our clientele falls with, like, 3 to 20 employees, if that makes sense. It's kind of where we're falling now. 70% of what we do falls in that general admin, so virtual assistant, executive assistant, or some level of social media content creation, right?
Okay.
Think the social media posting, email campaigns, CRM, like, you know, anything digital. And I'd say that other 30% is either more specialized, like construction roles, estimators, bookkeepers, or more technical things, SEO, web developers, and things like that.
Interesting. Okay, so there's a large portion that are generalist, and then you do have some specialists as well.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, and what we do go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I've used a few VAs over the last couple of years with varying level of success, I would say. Mm-hmm. Actually, I got kind of a bad taste in my mouth with VAs because of my experience, but I hear so many have such success with it that it's just a core piece of their business they couldn't live without.
The thing that people need to realize with VAs is there's a lot of people have bad experiences. So obviously you're using the global talent pool and outsourcing for cost reasons, right? Like, if that wasn't there, you'd hire someone that was with you in Arizona that you could sit here, touch and feel, right? Like, let's not confuse that. That said, because it's cost saving, everyone immediately races to the immediate or the absolute bottom. And anytime I found someone who just races to the bottom, they have this terrible experience. I'm not saying that's what you did or the experience you had.
Yep.
I always tell people, take that bottom, add $300 a month, add $350 a month. It'll be not necessarily negligible to you, but it'll be minor, right?
Yep.
And you will have such a significant improvement in the experience that you're like, oh, this is why people have such good experiences, right? And then there's all sorts of communication tools and trainings and, like, focusing on, like, the cultural, like, how does Randy like to interact with people? Like, how do you like to be interacted with? Instead of just focusing on, I need someone who can make calls, or I need someone who can do data entry, I need research. Like, that's all good and well. You can find that 10 times over. Find the person that matches with you as if you're hiring someone. And if you have to get into personality assessments and things like that, do it. Treat like an employee, not a commodity. And I think you'll have a lot more success.
I love it. Yeah, no, it's exactly what you said. I was looking for something cheap to solve a big solution, which was just admin, and then the communication wasn't there, or the would miss delivery dates, or inevitably with the folks that I was working with, it seemed like there was a storm and the electricity was going out constantly, and a lot of unpredictability there where I was looking
Well, that
for
even gets
predictability.
into like provincial stuff, right? Like there's certain provinces that have a higher propensity in the Philippines for outages, right? If you go to Manila or Metro Manila, that's where a lot of the universities are. There's more sophistication there. It's like going to the hub of New York City, right? Talent pool's wider. Infrastructure is better. You'll have to pay a little bit more, right? Because cost of living in Manila is higher. But I think you'll solve a couple of those problems.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So, okay. So what does your business look like today where you have an outsourcing business? Do you, obviously you're leveraging VAs for your business as well, but
100%.
what does your structure look like?
Yeah, so I eat my own cooking. Our entire back office is outsourced to the Philippines, except for one employee. We have one person who's stateside. I'm a believer that we want to still have some North American presence when interacting with clients. We don't like to get in the way of working. Like our clients have businesses to run, but at the same time, we want to be there for training, support, onboarding, and we find that to be very important. So most of my day is spent providing support to clients, doing sales calls and looking for new lead generation. And we've got, a recruiting arm, we got an ops and finance arm, client success arm, and a resource management arm. And I mean, we are going through resumes all day, every day. It's a lot of fun, but my day is mostly filled with talking to customers that are either ongoing. It's like, hey, Randy, how's it going? What can we be doing to better support you? Is there training that Timmy needs? Like, do we need to help on Excel, QuickBooks, whatever? If so, let's pull out, put a training plan together. Or talking with clients about how we go about finding them and sourcing them. And the big thing is our product is people. So one of the last things I'll ever let go of in this business is the screening of them. So our group or our recruiting team will screen resumes, do screenings, and they'll say, hey, Mike, here's five people. I will actually physically or personally screen every single one of them before I ever put them across your desk with the idea of saying, Randy, I got three people that I've vetted that I think are perfect for you. Here's the resume. Here's their portfolio. Let's hop on the call. Let's interview them.
Love it.
So every day is some flavor of that.
Now, I know that especially in the community where you and I met, there's a number of other folks that are trying to provide or that do provide a similar service to what you do. And
Yeah.
if a quick Google search, you'll find 100 different folks that are doing something similar. I won't say the
Yeah.
same, but how do you guys differentiate yourselves against all of the other guys out there that are trying to provide the same service?
100%. And I'm glad you brought that up because that's part of the reason we got into it. It's a very fragmented market. There's 1,000 people out there doing it. If there were two or three, I'd be worried because some big guys would come crush us. So I don't know, 10 minutes ago, you made the comment that like you can be successful as an entrepreneur if you just work hard, provide good service. And that's why I love this business. If you just work hard, provide good service, you are providing something that somebody needs that they don't, not that they don't need, you're going to find success. So if you look at the space, where do people have failure points? A lack of communication and training. So that's why we have our resource success team, our client success team to get ahead of those issues, right? People don't know how to onboard or welcome someone into an organization, right? So here are all the tips, tools, tricks. We do training leading up, like we gear you up as much as we possibly can. And then we're big. If someone's coming to me, like, hey, Mike, I want bottom of the barrel, and you're saying I need like a mid-level person, we won't work with you, right? Because that's a failure point. I'm failing you, I'm failing us, I'm failing the resource. So this is me and my founder's second kind of bite at the app, co-founder, second bite of the apple. So we're not sitting here, trying to be greedy or quick to make a quick buck. We are truly trying to create something with a strong foundation that's built for the future. So
Love it.
long-winded answer, but just making sure people get what they need and that we're providing good service and good quality
Yep,
people.
you're bringing the same quality of service that worked for you in various roles prior to this and ownership
Correct.
structure is interesting. So for the audience member that's listening, I think a lot of people feel like you need to be a large business before you can get into the VA or take advantage of having a
Yeah.
VA. But what I've learned is that even just busy households, people use VAs, salespeople that have
Yeah.
have huge administrative burdens that they're covering actually leverage VAs. For the W-2 employee that's listening, maybe this isn't your avatar, but do you see folks using those? And if so, what kind of services or what kind of activities do you see the VAs doing?
So with the W-2 folks, we have a handful of clients there. The big thing you got to keep in mind is your is your corporate employer okay with you using them if they're getting the CRM systems or things like that? And if not, how are you going to kick things off the side of your desk? So we see a lot of like med device sales folks. They're out there constantly prospecting, looking at doctors. So what are they doing, right? They're setting appointments. They're doing research on these doctors they're going to meet with, right? And when I say research, it's, you know, you're going to see Dr. Smith. Check him out on Facebook. Can you see what his wife's profile? What are they interested in? So this way you're going into a sales meeting and you know that his wife loves, you know, getting her nails done and little Timmy plays baseball and little Julie plays soccer. You go and you have some connection points, right? So there's all this research that you could be doing that you don't have time to do because you're out selling, doing corporate expense reports, all the stuff you don't need to be doing, right? And so we see that. I talked to an investment banker yesterday who's constantly putting together proposals, pitch decks, creatives, and is also trying to show thought leadership on LinkedIn. So what is she going to be using this person for? Creating pitch decks, creating the actual formatting, ghostwriting for her on LinkedIn, creating a social media calendar, showing thought leadership in the space so that people can come and find her. So it's a big thing. We have this cool thing. It's kind of cheesy, but it helps resonate. Above the shoulder and below the shoulder activities. Above the shoulder activities are things that you should be doing every single day that drive your business forward, that you find enjoyable or that you're good at. Below the shoulder activities are things that you either stink at, that you don't enjoy doing, or that aren't like immediate needs. And if you were to spend a day or two just writing down every time you did something you didn't like, you'd see this long list. Assign how many hours a week you're spending on that, and then assign like how much is an hour of your time worth, and add it up. You'd be like, holy crap, I'm spending, I don't know, $5,000, $7,000, $4,000 a month doing below the shoulder activities. I should outsource that so I can then focus on the top three things that will drive my business or personal life forward. And that's what it's all about. It's about the freedom and growth and scalability in an efficient way.
Love it. Love it. You summarized it perfectly. And I'm thinking about, you know, the passive investor that's out there trying to find and vet operators. I would imagine there's some activities there that a VA could take advantage of as well. Yeah.
And so things like that require a ton of research, kind of digging in. For every 100 people you run through, you might find one, right? Every deal you look at, you might find every 10 deals, not 10, probably every 100 deals, you might find one. So if you want to be a passive investor, you want to be passive, right? Like you enjoy that lifestyle. So you need someone who's out there running and blocking and tackling and inputting data into your formulas or whatever data room that you have and allowing you to make quicker, more passive decisions, right? Because that's what it's all about, being a passive investor. So they allow you to be passive, whether you want to be sitting on the beach or doing something else or being with your family. It doesn't matter to me. Let that person lead block for you, is what we say.
I love it. I love it. Very cool. Like this is no doubt you're going to be wildly successful in this space with the success seen in other industries in the past. Very interesting. I'm curious from a with the investors that I talk to, I always say you've got to have a way to make money. You have to have a way to place money. And so it grows responsibly over time. Where are you investing your dollars today? Is it primarily into your businesses or do you invest in other spaces as well?
Yeah. So over the last couple of years, I've been investing into my businesses kind of for two reasons. Nexus Point, getting off the ground. We're focused on talent, focused on marketing, figuring out where we want to be, right? Yeah. So that's where that is going. And some of the more passive things, for example, we mentioned the firearms. Like post COVID, there's a huge dip, right? So there was a necessity to put capital into those businesses. They were doing great. Yeah. They dropped across the board. It's now back and kind of stabilized. I've been focusing less on secondary things. I've got a couple hard money loans out right now that I'm doing, but it's just been, I feel like an interesting little while. We got an election year coming up. So back to my conversation about, even though I sound like a wild man, I'm kind of conservative. I'm sitting tight, just kind of watching what's playing out, placing hard money loans with things that I really trust, that I'm getting really good returns on, things that I control. I did a handful of like secondary investments into, you know, other private equity groups, some crypto stuff, right? That I'm in the black on. And what I've realized, I don't like when I don't have control. I'm in a parking lot deal. It's going to do great, but it's been like a year longer than it needs to be. Like I want the money back. And so I'm focused on things where I have my hands on it.
Love it. Love it. Very good. Well, this has been, very educational for me, and I'm sure the audience has enjoyed it as well. But I do have a few questions that I would like to ask before we wrap things up. If you've got a few more minutes.
Let's do it, Randy.
All right, let's jump in. So thinking back to, the avatar again is the newer passive investor. Are there resources or books or podcasts that maybe you used in the past when you were getting ramped up in the space that could be valuable for our listeners to investigate further?
Yeah. So a couple of things. You probably get this probably gets overused, but Bigger Pockets is one of the greatest resources I ever had as far as getting into the real estate space. It just was. Okay. And it wasn't necessarily what I was finding online. It was the people I connected with, much like GoBundance, right? It's less about online. It's the people that you connect with. So I also think a group like GoBundance is a huge value because you're surrounding yourself with just A-plus players. A very motivational book. It's not really something you learn a lot from, but it's Titan, the biography of John Rockefeller. So you want to talk about a guy who was vertically integrated. He owned the land, the oil, the machines he was drilling the oil with, the rail cars, the rail companies, the candles he was putting. I mean, he owned everything. So as you think about your business and how you grow it and want to do it, it's just a phenomenal. He's a quirky guy, by the way. So you'll read, like, wow, what a weirdo. But he was a billionaire before people knew that was a thing. So that book to me is awesome. And then, I really like the 4-Hour Work Week. I think it's taken too far to the extreme, but what it does, if you just kind of boil it down to some of the tips and tricks to kind of life hack, I think that's a really, you got to look at it from that angle. I think you'll learn a lot about how to be efficient and like value your time because you only got 80 years on this planet. So you might as well be efficient with it.
Yeah. No doubt. I would agree with you. I think, some people try to take that too far and create lifestyle businesses. And, it creates this perception that become an entrepreneur and you can just, golf all day and sit on the beach. And I will tell you that is absolutely not the case in my experience. I'm probably working twice as many hours as I ever did in corporate America, but certainly more rewarding than it was back 100%. In the day. So,
and I'll be honest, when I had a couple of years, like I said, where I was golfing too much. I wasn't like, and when I stopped doing that, income was dropping a little bit. Things were getting a little, okay, I got to lean back in. And I'm at my desk in my office right now, and I get so much fulfillment out of this. As soon as we hang up, going on a date with my wife for dinner, and it's like, I value that so much more now because of all the hard work I put in. Whereas if you're just bumming around all day, it's just another hour, right?
Yep.
So
good for you. Yeah. Well, very good. Let's see here. So, being from GoBundance, we have this idea about bucket list items. So is there a recent bucket list item you've checked off your list or what you're hoping for soon?
Yeah. So I moved to my favorite vacation spot. So I started building a house down here in 2021. So we're in Inlet Beach. So most people know it as 30A. It's in the panhandle of Florida on the Gulf. And it's one of those places where every time we'd leave, I'd be like, man, we got to go back to Atlanta. Like, I love it here. I just feel so relaxed. So 2021, we started building a house here. We moved down here the very, very end of 22 and have been here ever since. And it's been awesome. It's relaxed, like lifestyle. Everyone's happy. And so it was a big move because we were in Atlanta for 11 or 12 years. That's where everything was, right? Yeah. And so that was really awesome.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. And then one final question I like to ask everybody, if you had $100,000 that you needed to place in an investment today and you could not invest it in your own deal, where would you put that capital?
That's a really good question. In this very present moment with all the volatility going out there, I would put it in some very safe, I know hard money loan doesn't necessarily associate itself with safeness, but someone that I know very well. Yep. Or I put in some conservative investment where I have immediate access to that liquidity just because, again, I might be wrong. I might be off base. It just feels – I don't have clear lenses on where things are going, and I need that for me to dump money into it, right? If you had asked me that, 2 years ago, I'd be like, crypto, right? Well, you saw what happened there. I got to be careful because I can get shiny object syndrome sometimes.
I'm doing the same thing. I am putting my money in liquid investments at this point, a good portion of it anyways. And I think there are going to be better days in the future for us to place capital for sure. So
yeah, especially if you see some of these interest rates and what's going to start happening with a lot of these multifamily guys, I'll be curious. Like a lot of people got over leveraged. I just want to see what happens over the next 12 months. And perhaps I miss out on some upside and opportunity, and I'm perfectly okay with that.
Yeah, perfect. Well, Mike, thank you so much. I really enjoyed having you on the show today. I think you brought a ton of value to the audience, a different lens than what I've traditionally had on the show, but super glad to have had you on the show with us.
Awesome, Randy. Thanks so much for the time.
Also, actually, you know, one question I didn't ask is if the audience wants to find you or learn more about what you're doing, how can they find you?
Yeah, so our website, nexuspt.io. You can send me an email at mike@nexuspt.io. You can find me on LinkedIn. And those are probably the three best spots to get me. So I appreciate you asking.
Awesome. All right. Well, again, thanks so much, Mike, for being on the show. This was a lot of fun. And to the audience, as always, we encourage you to continue that education journey in the passive investment space. But more importantly than that, I encourage you to actually take some action and make a decision to invest passively in your first deal. I'm convinced once you do, you will just wish you would have started sooner. So thank you again for joining us today, and be sure to join us next Thursday for another great episode.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.